Welcome into the Fantasy Sanctuary for another Best Ball Show, joined by Mike Leone of Established Run. If somehow you aren't familiar with Mike's work, now is the time to be familiar with his work. Him and his team over at Established Run put out some of the best DFS stuff. When you're looking for projections for DFS stuff, that's the only site I trust. Their best ball work is incredible. And I mean, we're going to talk briefly about some of Mike's work before jumping into a DraftKings Best Ball draft in about 5 minutes' time. But Mike, we were just chatting before we came on air. Like, the thirst for best ball, it's just all-encompassing at the minute. Have you really felt that this year in terms of the content you've been putting out earlier than usual?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we started to feel it last year where we needed to get our rankings up a little bit earlier and like just felt more pressure to have the rankings in line at an earlier point in the season because a lot of people were bumping, you know, turning out Best Ball Mania 3 drafts a ton. And then this year, it's like there was just no question. We just had to get the rankings out super early, like stay on top of everything. And I mean, it's fun. It's definitely tough. You lose a little bit of a break in the off season. There's essentially no off season now, but enjoying the thirst. I think it's only going to continue to grow as we get like more unique types of tournaments. Underdog, we're already seeing some of that. DraftKings has a lot of single entry stuff and things at different stakes levels. So I'm excited for it.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good one. And if you are here in the chat, do let us know. We will be jumping into a draft in about 5-10 minutes' time. But like every year, there seems to be a few articles that really kind of catch the attention of the best ball community, whether it's like, you know, last year, Pete Overzet's Week 17 video, Pat Corain's Legendary Upside article, and going back the year before that, Jack Miller's brilliant Running Back Dead Zone article for Established a Run. Like, this year, though, it feels like the one that everybody keeps coming back to is the Best Ball Manifesto, which you wrote and is absolutely must-read material. It's linked in the description below. And if you haven't read it already, I'd really urge you to go and read it at least once. I've probably read it 2 or 3 times this off-season, just taking in different bits of data in there. But when you started diving into that data, Mike, was there anything that really stood out to you straight from the get-go that really surprised you?
So the reason I wrote it in the first place and it kind of grew from initial idea was I just really wanted to measure like what helps win the playoff weeks because we know there's so high leverage for the payout structure in Best Ball Mania. And I felt like there really wasn't too much good analysis on that because most of it looked at finals advance rate, which is super noisy, super small sample. So that's the reason why I wrote it in the first place and then kind of went down rabbit hole after rabbit hole and expanded it to different topics, but definitely the importance of stacking stuck out. I mean, kind of knew it was important, but it definitely bared out in the data that it helps you reach the weekly upside that you need to win the playoff weeks 15, 16, 17, those types of formats. A little bit more than I expected was one thing. And then just from a very macro standpoint, I think it's a really plus EV tournament to play. It's crazy high variance. So your odds of realizing that EV might be low, but it just seemed like as I went through it, there's just so many, if you're smart with your roster construction, you're cognizant of ADP value, and you make sure to correlate a little bit, you don't have to like have a crystal ball. You can make some really good teams and be pretty plus EV, just, you know, doing those really basic things well and consistently.
Yeah, I think that's something that players who perhaps are kind of newer to best ball sometimes feel the pressure with their picks a bit more. But it's like, if you can stick to structure and scoop up ADP value and backdoor your way into some stacks if you're feeling shut out of other ones, 9 times out of 10, you come away from the draft feeling like you've got quite a nice team. Your manifesto, it found that like more often teams that have their quarterback stacked, they typically did better. Teams with 2 quarterbacks in particular, that kind of stuck out. But is there a level where you'd say that the stacks aren't worth it? So, like, if you're later on in a draft, are you shoehorning in, like, likes of Ryan Tannehill with Kyle Phillips and players like that? Or do you sometimes feel like it needs to happen organically more than that?
I kind of feel it needs to happen organically a little bit more than that. You know, we're going to do a DraftKings draft, though, and sometimes that's a little different than Underdog, where Underdog, the rest of the drafters are sort of trying to stack. So sometimes, if I have a Mahomes, for example, sometimes the pass catchers fall in Kansas City because there's not that other person with Mahomes who's trying to stack them. Whereas on DraftKings, people will do anything. And sometimes I found myself having to sort of create these really emergency stacks and correlations at the end of drafts. So it happens more to me on DraftKings. I also feel like with the 20 rounds, I'm more willing to take a shot on like you know, a wide receiver. You know, I took Will Levis late on a DeAndre Hopkins team that I was just short of a third quarterback and was like, well, you know, if they sign Tennessee and Levis comes in, so I get more creative on DraftKings than Underdog for sure. I'm usually try to be cognizant about it enough throughout the draft that I don't get too stuck, but you know, as you said, 9 out of 10 times you feel good, but there's always 1 out of 10 times where, especially the way I draft, where I do push the ADP value and I try and be flexible and make it all work. Once in a while, it just goes poorly.
Yeah, well, we are going to draft DraftKings team, and I'll just get jumped in there because of a minute. They are filling up quite fast, but there's always the 2 minutes to kind of sit and wait on it. You mentioned kind of briefly about DraftKings drafts being a little wilder. We've got a question from Chris in the chat who asked whether there's any parts of the manifesto that you feel translate particularly well over to DraftKings.
I think the stacking, you know, translate. I think most of it translates pretty well to DraftKings, honestly. The one adjustment I make on DraftKings is I know I'm more likely to get some really good ADP values and build some super teams. As a result of like knowing that over the course of the draft, I am a bit more willing to reach on a stack earlier than I am on Underdog, just because people will snipe, you know, I was talking to Drew Dinkmeyer and he's like, these teams keep taking unstacked Burrow ahead of me when I have Chase and Higgins. And so I'm a little bit more proactive about taking the quarterback, I guess, just in line with the market, even if I don't agree with the market's ADP value. So that's one of the biggest difference for me on DraftKings. But otherwise, I mean, it's a super large field tournament. You know, the playoff weeks are somewhat similar. I do like that it's a little bit flatter in week 17 than on Underdog, but still ultimately, you know, you're playing for first place. So I think most of this stuff still pertains to drafting. Some of the roster construction stuff's a little different because you've got the extra 2 rounds. And I sometimes have a tough time knowing what to do because I feel like I'm set. I'm so used to the 18-round drafts that I'm like, I don't really know which way to go. So definitely like more like 4 tight end drafts I do on DraftKings and more 3 quarterback drafts, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, just touching on what you talked about, the contest there, for anybody who's not played a lot of DraftKings, where it's $1 million up top, 100K or more for finishing inside the top 10. If you finish inside the top 100, you're going to walk away with a minimum of 10 grand. So there is plenty of money there, but it is 1,400 people in the final. One of the things you touched on in the manifesto was that week 17 game stacking could increase your chance of winning by, I think, up to about 50% in a 470-person field. How much do you think that's going to be the case on DraftKings?
Yeah, I think that would translate pretty well over to DraftKings. It's what's the size field like, about double?
Yeah, the Underdog, it's 1.2 million altogether. So yeah, about double.
But then the finals, I think.
Oh, is sorry, about the finals double. 1,400 compared to like 470.
Okay, so it's about triple. I mean, I think the stacking is going to be pretty important on DraftKings as well. I always like to make the delineation. It's not like you are dead if you're not fully stacked or game stacked or don't have a bring back. I think sometimes people interpret wrong and think they're just totally stone dead. I know I pick on Davis Maddock a little bit, but he's kind of like crazy with like, oh, I mean, how am I going to win with a Cousins Addison stack in week 17 if I don't have Jefferson? It's like random things do happen, but you just want to increase your odds with the correlation. So I think it's going to translate pretty well to DraftKings, where you still want that level of game stacking. And it's generally the quarterback, I find, honestly, is the toughest part on DraftKings. So I think they're overvalued. They should be going later on DraftKings, given the whole PPR and some of the bonus scoring, but they actually go earlier and people are more likely to take them unstacked. So,
yeah. And we are in the draft room. And as you can see, it's a little bit of a wild day on DraftKings. Travis Kelce goes at 101. If you haven't already checked out DraftKings today, they're essentially giving you 3 free entries into the DK Millie Maker. Once you opt in via the promotions page, you can get $10 back for your first 3 drafts you enter into that contest. We are 1 pick away, and it's Austin Eckler, Stefon Diggs, AJ Brown, Bijan Robinson. Mike, anyone you want to go with here?
I've got Eckler as a little tier ahead of these guys. I think he could be the RB1 overall. Really excited about the Chargers offense. And I do think on DraftKings too, they're not as wide receiver hungry. So it's a little easier to make these hero RB teams work and still be strong.
So I'm glad you do that, because I wanted to touch on this. So Eckler was a player I was struggling on because earlier on in the off season, it was easy to kind of look at his stats and go, okay, he's had like 17 touchdowns in back-to-back seasons. Last year, he had so many check downs from Justin Herbert because he was injured and the wide receivers were unhealthy. But you and Ben Gretsch, in your projection series you've just done, which is fantastic, going division by division, talking about all the different projections you have on each player and really talking them out. You guys kind of talked about how even in your worst-case scenarios for Austin Ekeler, you still felt he had RB1 upside. Was that something that surprised you when you got into the numbers, or were you just kind of high on him from get-go?
A little bit surprised me for the reasons you said. You know, it seems like a guy who's probably going to regress in terms of catches and touchdowns. I know Corain and I struggled even last year when we did the legendary running back upside podcast on Establish the Edge. Ultimately, though, like this offense, I think we're just really bullish on in terms of pace, pass volume, scoring upside. If Justin Herbert can just be more efficient than he was last year, you might lose some of the pure volume for Ekeler, but I still think he's going to score a ton of touchdowns, you know, just the way this team operates. They're also like, it's a tiny thing, but they're really aggressive in terms of going for it on fourth down and more likely to go for the touchdown than settle for a field goal. So I feel pretty comfortable. And we're at the point now where even CMC's workload isn't as crazy as it was in the past. It's almost like an Ekeler type workload for him.
Yeah, definitely. It's been one where I've definitely come back around to it. I was sprinkling him in, so I'm kind of at about 5-6%, so I don't feel too far behind it. And that's kind of my general approach of round one players. I don't really want to fade anyone completely. We are a couple of picks away. We do have Ryan in the chat who's picking one pick before us, and then we've got Amon Ra St. Brown, Garrett Wilson, Jalen Hurts, Jalen Waddle, Jonathan Taylor, Derrick Henry, Tony Pollard. Are you leaning towards wide receiver here or running back?
Probably wide receiver here, especially with having started with one. I mean, Amon Ra would have been great. I don't know what your preference is. I mean, Garrett Wilson and Waddle are both good options. We're a little bit against the market having Waddle ahead of Garrett Wilson, but I think either is really a pretty strong option here.
Well, let's go with Jalen Waddle. I'm a bit higher on Jalen Waddle myself, so I'm happy to do that. Yeah, I think Garrett Wilson, my main concern is just Aaron Rodgers and the rate of play and stuff, how he goes there. I think he's definitely going to score plenty of touchdowns this year and have a good season, but I just think how Waddle can get there is probably something which I'm slightly higher on at the minute. In general, this draft so far hasn't been too crazy. Nick Chubb going at the 111 is probably up there, along with Travis Kelce going at the 101. How do you find, like, do you do a lot of these drafts at the $10 level, or are you typically going into the higher stakes? I know when it comes to DFS, you're more of a higher stakes player.
Most of my DK drafts have been in this $10 tournament thus far. They fill right away is a big advantage to doing them. And I struggle with the DK interface on slow drafts. So I don't do a lot of slow drafts. So when I do a slow draft, I usually do one of the higher stakes ones on DK, but I don't do as many slows as I do on Underdog. And I just think this tournament, talk about how Best Ball Mania 4, like my takeaway looking at the data was that it's probably pretty plus EV. This tournament, obviously lower dollars, so your EV in terms of total dollars might be less than Underdog, but percentage-wise, it's got to be so high just because you got so many more casuals drafting over on DraftKings. Your advance rates probably should be pretty good, and you're going to have some, you know, once you get into the playoffs, it might be overrated how good you feel about your teams because there's going to be so many people in all the leagues that feel great about their teams, but I do think you should be able to advance just like a really high amount of teams on DraftKings.
I think that's kind of something I've found in the past, like entering these contests just by adhering to mindful structures, hero RB, zero RB, dual RB. As long as you're sticking within them and being mindful, as long as you're aiming to kind of get five wide receivers by the time you leave the first nine rounds, generally you'll be surprised at how well your teams can advance. And even last year, I was very heavily in on Trey Lance and Lamar Jackson. So I limped my way to the playoffs, but still advanced, you know, almost 30% of my team. So you don't have to be perfect to advance, but then it can quickly go wrong in the playoffs if you don't have what you need. And I definitely didn't have what I needed last year. So that team that has gone Travis Kelce, then gets Mahomes back, and then has gone on auto draft. So I guess they set a queue beforehand. How do you feel about that kind of Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes star? I mean, there was probably no need for the 101 to do it because you can get that like 1-4 and stuff.
Yeah. I'm just have never wrapped my head around like going into the drafts and like, I want this stack. I'm going to make sure I get it, which they clearly were doing out of the 101. So I don't have a ton of Kelce Mahomes because I don't take Kelce as early as some people, which also makes it harder to get Mahomes because then you would have to take Mahomes earlier in the second round than I want to. I've gotten a couple of them. Not a lot, like here and there. I do like it a little bit more on DraftKings just because Mahomes is going to hit that bonus so much more consistently and Kelce can separate from the rest of the tight end position even more with the full PPR scoring. But I don't have it a ton just because it's, you know, really expensive at the onesie position, right?
I think it's like the bonuses come into big play on it for that stack. I think that's the main selling point for me on them. Like, because the amount, Patrick Mahomes said, I think it was 10 300 plus passing yard games last season compared to six, the next nearest quarterback. And, you know, you look at tight ends, generally speaking, the non-elite tight ends just don't put up 100 yard games, do they? So if I was trying to sell myself on it, it'd be that. But yeah, it's a hard click because you just become so much behind the eight ball on other positions. We are two picks away here, one pick away, and obviously we have Eckler and Jalen Waddle so far. Keenan Allen, Lamar Jackson, Breece Hall, Calvin Ridley towards the top of the queue. Anybody stand out to you, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, like Breece or Keenan, I mean, it's boring. Those guys are near the top. I don't know if it makes sense to just go in on the Chargers offense here and go with Keenan and hope to get a stack, but those would be my two options. I saw you're pretty high on Debo, and he went a couple picks before. Would have been fine with that as well.
Yeah, let's go with Keenan Allen. I like going in on the Chargers offense. Definitely, I was in on the passing offense before I came around on Eckler. One of the players who, like, I'm a little surprised hasn't got steamed up a bit so early is Josh Jacobs. He went at the 2-2 in this draft, but quite often he's going in the third round. Like, last year, he was like the RB3 and half PPR points. And now he's got Jimmy Garoppolo, who every year he's played over 10 games, has always targeted running backs at least 100 times. Do you think Josh Jacobs is somebody that in a few months we're all going to be like, we should have seen it coming? He did it to us again.
Yeah, I think he's going too late. I don't know if I have that level of confidence just because that running back in general, you know, things can go bad and there's some systemic concerns with that offense. But I do quite frequently find myself taking him at the 2-3 turn, kind of where Henry went in this draft, usually after Devonta Smith. But after Devonta Smith and T. Higgins go, I think some of the other wide receivers are getting pushed up a little too early, and I prefer someone like Jacobs or even, you know, but we were close on Breece Hall, just sort of depending on what the build is.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so we're a couple picks away. We've got so far Austin Eckler, Keenan Allen, Jalen Waddle, quite a nice traditional hero RB approach here. Calvin Ridley, Christian Kirk, and Travis Etienne, that little cluster of Jags, were all at the top of ADP with Joe Burrow, Justin Fields, Joe Mixon, DeAndre Hopkins, and then TJ Hockenson. Have you found anyone in this range you're particularly heavy on, Mike?
On DK, I take Hopkins a lot here, but I think Ridley's fine too. You know, you get another out on rounds 5-6, either getting Herbert or Lawrence. I mentioned I'll reach a little bit more on the stack. I probably would go, and I have Kirk, honestly, in my personal ranks a little higher than Ridley, but I, based on ADP, you know, there's a chance you get Kirk coming back. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say. I've been a little higher on Kirk. I've taken more Kirk than I have taken Ridley so far. Do you, like, I've seen a couple of people maybe argument lately that, you know, Calvin Ridley hasn't really played for 2 years. We saw the effect on Deshaun Watson when he came back after playing for barely any time in 2 years. Are you feeling bullish on Calvin Ridley in general? Do you feel like it's just such a different circumstances and, you know, Calvin Ridley's having a different offseason that they're not really apples to apples comparisons?
It's really tough for me to evaluate Ridley. This ceiling's obviously, I think, higher than Christian Kirk just because we've seen some of the superstar potential out of Ridley. I think he went like the 1-2 turn 2 years ago. So we've seen that upside. But there's definitely a lot of uncertainty here too. And I think people tend to just ignore the uncertainty of not playing in a while and new offense. And so I'm in on him, but I'm, you know, cautiously in on him, I guess I would say. Whereas Kirk, I just feel confident Kirk's going to, you know, catch 80 plus balls, like, you know, yeah, without blinking. And if he just runs a little bit hot on efficiency or something, I think he has more upside than people are, you know, giving credit for. See, this is what this is what happens on DK, the Burrow Herbert at the turn, and that's where I will reach more than usual. But I didn't want to take. I think it would have been too much to take Herbert in the fourth there, but.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that draft of 101 with Kelce, Mahomes, Derrick Henry, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert. Yeah, I mean, essentially we're in 11-team league now, so we can just try to make up for it by scooping value elsewhere. I'll just quickly touch on Holly question in the chat. Doesn't the DK bonus for quarterbacks make it easier to take multiple mid-tier QBs later than the elite ones? So, yeah, I mean, there is a 300-yard bonus for them, but like last year, you look back, Mahomes had 10 games of 300-plus passing yards.
Right.
Allen had 6, Goff had 5. So it's like, it's a really steep drop off between them. So it does kind of make up for it, doesn't it? But I mean, I often find the way when we're playing DFS on a Sunday that it is very much a case of the elite guys really put up those bonuses substantially more often.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, there's the idea that just due to quantity, you're more likely to hit that bonus. I don't know if it's, that's necessarily true. I haven't actually tested that, but my inclination would be that, you know, the bonuses would still actually favor the elite quality teams as opposed to the opposite.
Yeah. So we are one pick away with Aaron Jones, Alexander Mattison, Brandon Ayuk, Cam Akers, Trevor Lawrence, which would give us about a stack with Calvin Ridley if we wanted it. Do you think we take the stack here, Mike?
I might on draft. If we're on underdog, I'd probably press it, but. I think here, just again, confidence in knowing I'm going to get a receiver the next round that I probably wouldn't get in round 6 on FanDuel. I'd take the stack. Having Waddle is like, gives me a little bit of like, oh, there's like a backdoor out, but I think I'd just lock it in at this point.
Yeah, I'm quite comfortable with that. So through 5 rounds, we have Austin Eckler, Jalen Waddle, Keenan Allen, Calvin Ridley, Trevor Lawrence. Is Trevor Lawrence in that kind of tier where you'd be comfortable doing a 2 quarterback build, or do you feel like he's below the Justin Herbert kind of Justin Fields line where you can get away with 2 more often?
I think if you're taking a quarterback in the first 6 rounds, you should be comfortable taking them in a 2 quarterback build is my general take. So yeah, I'm comfortable taking him in a 2 quarterback build. I don't mind it being a good second quarterback. You know, it's, you know, sometimes if I get Mahomes, I'll make it a really, like, you know, I might drop down all the way to Kenny Pickett, but like, I think like Tua is still in play for us, for example.
Yeah.
With the Waddle stuff. But yeah, I'm probably stopping at 2 unless I just really miss out on the mid tier. And then if I do drop down to like a Pickett type, maybe I'll take another one later as well.
Do you find, like, because obviously you draft an underdog as well as over here and then as well as on FFPC, do you find, like, that you're ever kind of leaning into that underdog mindset of 2 quarterbacks more often and having to tell yourself it's okay to take a third in these 20-round drafts?
Sometimes. Again, a lot of times that once I get through round 18, I'm pretty comfortable with where I'm at. And then yeah. I'm like, oh, what do I do? So I try to think about it earlier, too, just understanding I'm going to have, you know, I don't have to take that third quarterback late, just understanding I can take an extra wide receiver lottery ticket later.
Yeah. So we are one pick away. Deontay Johnson goes off the board just before it gets to us. It's J.K. Dobbins, Tyler Lockett, Miles Sanders, Dallas Goedert, Kadarius Toney, Damian Pierce, Michael Pittman, Mike Evans. Anybody kind of stand out to you?
I mean, I think I'd go with the week 17 correlation here with Dobbins. We've been running where a lot of times the top of the ADP is lined up pretty well for us. So,
yeah.
What are you thinking?
Well, I mean, I'm a Ravens fan, so you don't have to threaten me with a good time of J.K. Dobbins. I do think, you know, this Todd Monken offense, they keep consistently talking about pace and wanting to play fast. But it was so infuriating as a Ravens fan to see lots of games last year where John Harbaugh talked to the media after and they'd be asking, why did you go away from J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards? And he'd be like, well, I'm not sure. That was a decision by Greg Roman. And I think, I try to temper it a little bit when I speak publicly, but I think J.K. Dobbins has a real chance to jump a big tier.
I think he was highest on our ranks at that point too, as well, like just on the ETR ranks. Yeah. The other thing that's nice, I mean, you've got the spike week overlay, which helps a lot because I think sometimes weeks 15 and 16 get undervalued as far as correlation. But we do get Dobbins coming back on Jacksonville in week 15 as well. So it's double correlation.
Yeah, definitely. So I've kind of, it's definitely, shout out to Spike Week for this tool, because it's definitely changed how much I draft on desktop compared to mobile now. But I have it set up for a number of things. You can see the week 15, week 16, week 17 opponents, how much the ADP's gone up in the last week. Then I also have my exposures there, followed by exposures with quarterbacks, running back, like my QB1, QB2, RB1, wide receiver 1, and tight end 1, because I think that's something that, as we get to this kind of stage in the offseason, I think I'm about 75 drafts in on this tournament now. It's kind of prioritizing, looking to make sure that all my builds aren't the same. Do you find that particularly around the turns, you end up with a lot of teams that feel similar?
Yeah, it can tend to happen. I do draft a lot of the same guys on DraftKings just because some of my favorite values fall a lot in this room. I think, you know, we've got some people that are following the stream and probably a little bit sharper, like Jackson Smith and Jigba and Addison just went, being able to get those guys sometimes in round 7, you know, they're usually, we don't have these wide receiver heavy teams as much, and you can eke out. That was kind of a tough turn for us with JSN, Addison, Burks, and Gabe Davis, like all going in a row. I was going to say that, like, a lot of times I end up with like some combination of like Drake London, Addison, JSN, all these guys that from an archetype standpoint are really strong bets to make that on underdog have been pushed way up. And like, you can actually get them on DraftKings at good prices. I take a ton of those guys. So a lot of my teams do look similarly, especially like at this point in the draft. They're probably different in the first, you know, 3 or 4 rounds, but once we start getting rounds 5 through 10, and then the double digit rounds kind of just depend based on, you know, structure and what we're looking for.
Yes, yeah,
so I know who I want. I'm afraid to say it on stream.
Okay, but... well, keep that in your hat then. If you are here for the first time today and checking us out because Mike is on the stream, thank you. We truly appreciate it. Hit the subscribe button whilst you are here, because we have weekly best ball streams. We have John Daigle coming on next week, Justin Herzig the week after. Mm-hmm. Loads more stuff coming down the pipeline. We've got loads of Dynasty content being pushed out by Rich. We've got redraft stuff chock full coming down the pipeline. Hit the subscribe button. We are one pick away. So, Mike, I'm not going to ask you until we're
okay. I'm not trying to be boring, just taking the top guy on the ADP board, but I was hoping for Kyle Pitts from the second we took Dobbins last round.
I'm absolutely fine with that. It just feels like we are still getting the discount on Kyle Pitts that, you know, people just aren't taking into consideration the fact that when he's played, he's actually been good. You know, Marcus Mariota was terrible at targeting him. And yeah, we can definitely survive the fact that we've not had to take a wide receiver there. Just going back to Jackson Smith and Jigba, he's one where, like, I can't stop clicking him, because over on underdog, he's like, he goes, I think it's like 63rd pick overall, wide receiver 32. But on DraftKings, he's going at like, normally pick 75 and he's wide receiver 36, but this is the format which feels like it's going to benefit him as a volume hog. Is he somebody that you keep clicking over here?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've started taking him more on underdog too as the ADP's fallen, because for a while it was more like in somewhere in the 50s. So 100% him and Addison, I've been clicking a ton in recent drafts. I was hoping we'd maybe get Tua coming back and just be done with quarterback for that stack, but he goes unstacked to the RB heavy team classic. I'd say we're probably looking at wide receiver here just to build that out a little bit more.
I think that, you know, it's something that kind of Pete and Sean Siegel talk about at times. Even when you're in a wide receiver heavy room, you can only fight against it for so long before ultimately you just do yourself more harm than good, really. So we have one pick away. Brandon Cooks is the top wide receiver who goes, of course. Cortland Sutton, Michael Thomas, Odell Beckham, Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman.
Yeah. So this is a tough one. I mean, one of the Baltimore receivers or Sutton is fine. Like, we get correlation. Those are probably near the top anyway.
We could take Sutton and then see which Ravens receiver comes back around.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. Like, we got three cracks at the Ravens wide receiver.
The Ravens receiver one, it's kind of interesting because, like, Rashad Bateman, like, over on underdog, he's been the wide receiver one for the Ravens over there. But over on here, he just doesn't seem to be jumping ahead of Odell. Like, Odell Beckham's still going as the wide receiver one here. And then I think there's a difference of about two full rounds between underdog where Odell Beckham is going and then over on DraftKings, it just seems a bit like the market on DraftKings isn't pushing receivers up in the same way it does on underdog. Players seem to be very static at the minute. I don't know if that's something you felt like, just not reacting to the news.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what to do with the Baltimore wide receivers, to be honest. Like, I'm mostly on an Odell fade, I guess, there. Just kind of leaning into the younger players. But as a Ravens fan, how are you feeling about Bateman and his health coming
back? I'm definitely in on Bateman. I think when that first news about the cortisone injection came out, it sounded a bit worrying. But then it turns out the metal screws have been taken out of his foot, and apparently that's what can lead to more issues. So I have been taking plenty, expecting him to jump up in ADP, but it certainly hasn't happened yet. Beckham, yeah, generally not clicking an awful lot of him. I think, you know, he could end up being used like he was with the Rams. Team at the turn takes Daniel Jones for their fourth quarterback behind Mahomes, Burrow, and Herbert. So, yeah, that's a frustrating one for anyone trying to build out stacks, definitely. But in general, yeah, I think I've got some exposure to Bateman, I've some to Flowers, particularly on, I mean, that Miami-Baltimore game, if it goes anything like the Week 2 one did last year.
Then the last time I won at DFS in Miami-Baltimore.
That was, it was a good day for me as well, as someone who played a lot of Ravens. Shout out to Olaf. Appreciate you being here, checking us out. We are a couple of picks away. So far, we have one quarterback, two running backs, four wide receivers, and one tight end. It's kind of a position in the draft where we can do, you know, various different things with it. We have two picks before us. At the top of the ADP queue is Dak Prescott, who goes. So it's Odell Beckham, Samaje Perine, which gives a little more charges correlation if we wanted it. Rashad Bateman does make it back. Do you want to take him?
Yeah, I think that makes sense for sure. I think it makes sense structure. I mean, we've, even though it's a little bit of a tough room, we've run kind of pure in terms of the getting the ADP value has kind of meshed with players that we like and players that are correlated, which doesn't always happen. But part of the reason why I like to stay real flexible and get ADP value, like, you know, we don't get Herbert, the force there, but because we took Ridley, we had a second option on Lawrence, and now we took Sutton later, and like, we can draft Russ potentially and still have the Denver LAC game stack, or we can stack it without the quarterbacks, which is fine. And I think people are too shy away from that too much sometimes.
Yeah, the only downside with Russ is it give us two quarterbacks on a week 9 bye. Yeah. Which how much do you weigh into like the bye week stuff?
I definitely weigh, this is where on DraftKings having the extra two rounds, I'm a little more open to it, where it might be a unique pairing and I can take a third quarterback like a Mac Jones late with, you know, I take a lot of like Gesicki and Hunter Henry, because I also take more tight ends on DraftKings, and then we can be covered there. So on underdog, I'd probably eliminate Russ, just because I would really only want this to be a two quarterback team. Or if it was a three quarterback team, I'd want it to probably be even later than Russ. But on DraftKings, just knowing how you can manipulate the board ahead of time, it's like, okay, I'll just take some tight ends that are actually starters in rounds 19 and 20. And like, we can take a third QB in round, you know, 17 or something.
Yeah. We are just two picks away. So we do have five wide receivers by the time we leave round 9, which is something I'm kind of a stickler for. I mean, over 50% of the teams in the DraftKings final last year had done that when they'd taken their players. So I just kind of, you know, we've seen that that plays out on underdog as something which typically works out really well. It's kind of a little area where there's plenty of running backs who are okay, or there's Jameson Williams for the Lions, you know, if we want to add him. So there's Brian Robinson, Zach Charbonnet, Zay Jones, Jarrett McKinnon, Jamal Williams. Any strong leans here, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I think I might get the double stack with Zay at this point. But I think if not, like, you know, A-chains are correlated. Running back bat that I think is okay here. Charbs is probably.
Let's go with Zay.
Yeah. I think should get one of these backs that we like coming back.
I think so. It's such a nice little area for it. It'll be interesting to see what the team on the turn does. So when you come up against an auto draft team like this, who through 9 rounds has 4 quarterbacks, including Mahomes, Burrow, Herbert, and 2 running backs, 0 wide receivers, and they have 3 tight ends now. Is there any way you try to particularly approach the draft room to counteract it?
I just try to be aware that like quarterbacks could get bumped up even earlier, and I might have to just reach on my quarterback stack even earlier than I normally want to. That's probably the biggest thing. Obviously, if you're hoping someone makes it back and they're top of the ADP board, there goes Russ, as I say that, you know, that's not going to happen, but I don't know if there's too much you can do beyond that.
Yeah.
So that's where too, like, I don't know what you would have done if maybe we should have just locked in Russ there. Like, it felt early given we didn't really need it, but I mean, we can make something else work backdoor.
Yeah, I think there's enough players that I'm kind of all right with. You know, we've kind of banked a lot of money on Trevor Lawrence, taking him in the fifth round, to really want him to be our starting quarterback more often than not. So I think there's enough guys in this kind of round 13 to 16 range where you can suddenly put a stack together that's kind of all right. But yeah, so Ryan in the chat saying it's 11-team competition.
Yeah.
He was waiting on Russ too. Yeah, it's definitely tricky. I mean, in terms of teams who did manage to get a stack, you can see Deft Angel, who's in the chat, managed to get a nice Vikings stack with Justin Jefferson, Hawkinson, Jordan Addison, Kirk Cousins. That feels like one which I would have been sweating on working out with this room. You know, the Russell Wilson pick does go unstacked to a team with Josh Allen, who had Gabe Davis. Are you higher than usual on your Bills team?
I think it's like a good bounce back spot for Gabe Davis, but he's not going that like such a discount that I have like a ton of him, but I do like him in general.
I think the ankle injury doesn't seem to get taken into account enough last year for what he was dealing with.
Yeah.
We are two picks away. Jameson Williams fallen 15 spots past ADP. Jamal Williams fallen 10 spots past ADP. Then Rashad Penny, who has dropped a little bit over the last few weeks on DraftKings. Do you want to take one of those running backs or go with some of the more value picks there?
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of spot where, like, I don't usually take Jameson Williams. He could make sense, but I'm fine with, like, Elijah Mitchell or Rashad Penny, too. I think I have those guys a little bit ahead of Jamal Williams. So
which one would you want to go for? I'll let you choose this one, Penny or Mitchell.
I guess I'd go Penny here and hope Mitchell makes it back.
Cool. I like
and
that.
Just kind of gamble a little bit more. But I rarely take Jameson Williams. If I'm going to, like, this guy who does golf, should definitely take him here. It's going to be around past ADP. It's also going to be on a team where I'm covered at wide receiver the first half of the season, which we're covered. Golf guy gets his Jameson stack. He's probably going to be pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I know Ryan's in the chat. Let us know what you were thinking, Ryan, if you're pleased with that. In terms of the Alvin Kamara situation, we saw yesterday that he's going to enter a plea agreement or whatever, and the general feeling seems to be that now he's going to get suspended for less games than initially thought. You know, people thought it could be as many as 8, and now people are talking about possibly as low as 4. Are you approaching the Saints running backs dramatically differently in the last 24 hours to how you were before that?
I wouldn't say dramatically differently. If it's 4 instead of 6, I don't know if that's like that massive in best ball. And 4 was always in the range of outcomes. And it seems like maybe he avoided like a really long suspension, but he also like there's the no suspension potential is like totally off the table too. So I don't know if the news really changed things all that much.
Yeah, I think it's kind of worth remembering that Taysom Hill seemed to be the goal line back last year. Jamal Williams, we just paid him good money after scoring like a ridiculous amount of touchdowns inside the 10-yard line. You know, finished the year with 17 touchdowns and over 1,000 yards. So I kind of struggle with Kamara. Before, I was taking him when he fell past ADP, but now I imagine he's probably going to get steamed up around or so. We are two picks away with a 1-3-6-1 build at the minute, you know, with pure kind of hero RB start. This spot in the draft feels like, you know, you can go in a number of directions with okay running backs with Elijah Mitchell, Jalen Warren, it's wide receivers like Michael Gallup and KJ Osborne, Rondale Moore, who I've all been clicking, Tyler Higbee as well. Anyone here who you take a lot of, Mike? Do you want to take Elijah Mitchell? We talked about him possibly coming back.
I mean, I'm pretty torn between Rondale and Elijah Mitchell. Structurally, Elijah might make a little more sense for us. I think Rondell might be a little bit better of a value and keeps like a Kyler backdoor stack open. So I could go either way, whatever you think's best, Tom.
Let's go with Rondell. I like what you were talking about there. Normally, I would have leaned towards running back there. And
we have Penny too, right? Like,
yeah, we do have Penny, so it gave us that kind of correlation. So I've probably taken a little more Kyler Murray than I should have, just looking. And Kyler Murray is, of course, off the board the previous round.
Oh, God, I just – no, I have these assumptions that I shouldn't make on DraftKings.
Yeah, so
I'm making here.
Kyler Murray definitely went heavily ahead of ADP to a team without any Cardinals. But, yeah, I've probably taken a little more Kyler Murray than I anticipated taking because I feel like it's a season where he's going to want to be on the field. You know, as much as the team might not want to rush him back, Murray's possibly playing for his job in some regards and needs to learn this new offense. So I'm kind of hopeful that by the end of the season he'd be on the field when it really counts for us looking towards the playoffs. And I think you can build around him okay, but I think maybe I should possibly start taking a few more 2QB teams with him and just risking it a little bit more. And thank you to Zach in the chat who mentioned the Kyler account. Did not see that.
I took Kyler recently on a couple of 2QB teams with like an elite QB with like a later bye week. But usually I do also have him on 3QB teams.
So Michael Gallup goes at the turn to the team on auto draft as a wide receiver 3. Last year, he was a top 100 pick for a decent chunk of the offseason before reports kind of pushed it back down, but he wasn't quite as ready as we might have hoped. This year, he's going typically about 40 to 50 spots later than he was last year at times. Is he somebody that you guys are high on at ETR?
We're like somewhat neutral. I think if you need a receiver at that point in the draft, we have him like a little bit above ADP and he's fine. A little concerned that maybe the skills that we thought were there just aren't there. But at the same time, I know when Gretchen and I did our podcast, it just seemed clear that he's probably going to have to, you know, probably going to run a ton of routes. You know, this team's got, you know, three obvious receivers in terms of their starting lineup in Brandon Cook, CeeDee Lamb, and Michael Gallup, and then like almost nothing. You know, there's just no depth on this team. So I think he's going to run enough routes with a good enough quarterback to be fine. I don't think he's going to have like a huge, huge breakout.
Yeah. So we are a couple of picks away. In terms of quarterbacks, if we did want a second one, we could take Bryce Young and maybe look at adding some of the later Panthers pass catchers onto there. It's Kenny Pickett, Brock Purdy before it gets a bit further ahead of ADP. Do you want to go down quarterback route or is there any of these kind of top options that stand
out? I think
out?
I might go take maybe a stab on like Mostert at running back or just go or Kendre, I think's fine. I think I might take another like running back here. And I kind of like having Ritter as a backdoor guy.
I'm getting a little too high on Kendre Miller. I had Pete Overzet on the show a few weeks ago, talked about Kendre Miller being one of his big offseason targets and he had lots of exposure to him. And ever since I seem to have been kind of clicking on him a little too happily at times.
I like the Bryce Young backdoor, but I kind of want quarterbacks in different games in week 17, if I can help it, where if Jacksonville, Carolina goes off, we're probably using Lawrence's score. And if it doesn't go off, you know, they probably both had bad scores. So almost like two bets on two separate games.
Yeah, very much. Sean in the chat asking, how do you guys get ownership shown in draft room on Underdog and DK? This is Spike Week add-on overlay. You can check out their website for the details about that. It's definitely very handy. I know there's a couple of other overlays out there that really help. And particularly when you're drafting on a stream like this and you lose track of certain things, it's definitely made my life easier. Big fan of some of the tools that Spike Week are pushing out there. We are 3 picks away. We have so far, let me just go back to the draft board. Austin Eckler, Jalen Waddle, Keenan Allen, Calvin Ridley, Trevor Lawrence, J.K. Dobbins, Kyle Pitts, Cortland Sutton, Rashad Bateman, Zay Jones, Rashad Penny, Rondale Moore, and Raheem Mostert. So after that kind of Rondale Moore, Kyler Murray mix-up, I feel pretty good about this team, Mike. It feels all right.
I was just going to ask if Chark went, and then he just went. That would have been a good bring back. I don't know at what point you want to just lock in like Ritter just to get the correlate. I mean, it's early. I might hold off and still have like Mac Jones as like a backdoor stack with the tight end. Yeah.
We could go. So in terms of players ahead, we've got Gainwell, Singletary, Van Jefferson, Marcus Valdez, Scandling, Rashi Rice, Juwan Johnson. We do need a second tight end at some point. Anyone there? We've got eight.
I'm not like MBS. I think he's a good value here.
I think so. Like, I think the hate's gone a little too far on him, and we know he's going to run a lot of routes. Chark, you mentioned like you guys at ETR looking at your rankings. You're about three rounds ahead of ADP on him on DraftKings. Is he just the only Panthers pass catcher you guys are really interested in, or is it just like that he really feels strongly that he's going to be great?
I guess it's we just have the order opposite of the market, and that sort of makes our position look more pronounced maybe than it is. But with Mingo, you know, he was an amazing prospect. Definitely some concerns that even though the opportunity is there, that he's necessarily going to demand a lot of volume right away. And then Adam Thielen, we just kind of think is dust and not the type of bet we want to make. His ADP is really starting to fall to the point where I think you can take him. But Chark is sort of the middle guy where we feel confident he's going to play right away. And he has a little bit more upside than Thielen. So he's kind of, I don't want to say best of both worlds because it's still scary. I mean, the odds of any receiver sort of in around 14 being, you know, we're not that confident on any wide receiver at this point in the draft, but that's the reason why we have Chark 1 and the market sort of has Chark 3.
Yeah, I think that's all entirely fair. We are two picks away. So Bryce Young has fallen 14 spots past ADP, but wouldn't really give us a lot. Stroud, Zeke Elliott, Sam Howell, Marvin Mims, Gesicki, Hunter Renfrow, Jaden Reed. Do you want to go with Gesicki to kind of open up that backdoor stack to Mac Jones, who's still
there?
Yeah,
I'd probably go Gesicki or Mims.
Just check that Pitts is on a week 11 bye. Does that affect it? Go Mims.
I think maybe I'd go Mims and just push tight end.
Yeah.
My thought with DraftKings is normally on underdog, I would be a two tight end team with Pitts. On DK, I could make it a three tight end team with two really late that I think are starting tight ends.
Yeah. James Brimacombe at Eagles on Twitter on a few weeks ago, and we didn't take a single tight end before our last four picks and took four with the last. And it's a build which James has used a lot on DraftKings, and it's one which isn't something I'd done, but I was pleasantly surprised by how the tight end room looked at the end of it, and it felt okay.
It makes it works out better than you would expect. You can get three legitimate starting tight ends and then maybe one swing on like an Isaiah Likely or something, which also I should say Likely is probably, you know, in the cards for us too on this type of team. If we took, you know, a stable second tight end, we could take a swing on a guy like Likely or, you know, one, you know, Musgrave, you know, one of those types of guys that's a little riskier.
Yeah, definitely. So we are now two picks away. In terms of quarterbacks, there is Stroud, Sam Howell, Mac Jones, Desmond Ridder. I feel like as long as Ryan ahead of us doesn't take Desmond Ridder unstacked, then I'd be comfortable taking Ridder here. Is that the play for you, Mike?
I think so. I think, you know, part of the reason why he's cheap is just concern over job, but we're making the bet on Pitts anyways, and I'd probably just lock in Ridder now. At this point,
I think it was the right time to do it. It was, you know, pushing him around the turn there. There were teams who all had at least two quarterbacks, apart from one team who took Bryce Young. But he had DJ Chark already, so it felt like a safer bet to make than pushing it to the other side of the board, where teams have been dealing with this auto draft team at the one spot, and things feel a little bit wilder over there. In terms of this draft room. Yeah, we can ignore the crazy team at one, but we've got Deft Angel at the two pick, who's got a very nice zero RB team with six wide receivers out of the first seven picks. TJ Hockenson only breaking that before then hitting six running backs in his next seven picks. Have you been, when Pete was on, we had a conversation about how this year, because of the running back values that are falling slightly, you have to consciously take the decision to really go zero RB. Have you found that you've not been leaning into it as much as you might have done in previous years?
I haven't leaned into zero RB as much, but a lot of that is because I think there's usually a really good running back value in round three or something early in the draft. So it becomes more of a hero RB build or dual RB to start. I have some zero RB teams, especially you mentioned like similar teams when you're at the turn. If I'm at the 12 spot, a lot of times I'm starting wide receiver, and then at, you know, 3-4, the round three running back values I like are gone. I'm going wide receiver again. So that's a spot where I end up a little bit more zero RB.
Yeah, definitely. And then at that pick, Deft Angel takes Gesicki and Jones for that nice little New England, everyone's favorite late stack. So far, we do have, in terms of teams, we've got Lawrence double stack with Calvin Ridley and Zay Jones. We've got those Chargers pairing of Eckler and Keenan Allen. We do have Kyle Pitts stacked with Desmond Ridder, which, again, feels quite nice. In terms of Week 17 stuff, we've got Eckler, Allen, Sutton, Mims playing in one game, Dobbins, Mostert, Waddle, Bateman. We are back up now on the clock.
Did Hurst go? I might go. Is the Hurst bye week? Yeah, I think I might go Hurst just to give us something coming back on the Jacksonville. You also get Atlanta, Carolina playing in the playoffs.
He's been a very easy click for me, Hayden Hurst, this year. I think, you know, he's not – by now we kind of know what he is. But equally, the Bengals targeted tight end at the lowest rate of any team in the league last year. So I feel like there's definitely a path where he could be slightly more productive this year than last year. And we're getting, I guess, like 5-6 round discount on where he was going last year.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the 5 or 6 tight ends that I just think are totally fine at the end of drafts, which is why the 4 tight ends. Conklin's another one, Gesicki, Hunter Henry, you know, Dawson Knox has started to go back a little bit earlier now, but there's just enough startable tight ends that, like, do I think he's going to have a huge breakout season? No, but, you know, he could catch a handful of touchdowns. He's going to be out there, and tight ends so volatile anyways that saving more premium picks at the middle of the draft, you know, makes sense to me.
Yeah, definitely. So we are a few picks away, and then we'll come back to a couple of questions in the chat. I will get to them in a few minutes. We have a 2-4-9-2 build, kind of comfortable with up to 10 wide receivers, really, on DraftKings. But with our hero RB start, do we want to be taking some more shots at running back here, Mike, do you think?
Yeah, we probably should be taking some more shots at RB.
So Chase Hunt, Zamir White, Michael Carter, Dwayne McBride, Latavius Murray, Israel Abanikanda, Chase Edmonds, Zach Moss, Zach Evans, any of those guys you find yourself clicking a lot?
Yeah, I mean, it's not an ideal spot for running back. I take McBride a decent bit. I started to come around to Latavius Murray. I haven't taken him yet, but I do think he's smart end around where he could challenge Damien Harris more than we're just assuming.
Let's take Latavius Murray. I've kind of made quite a big position on Damien Harris, and I'm trying to back off that slightly.
All right. And then McBride, I take just because I don't think the running backs in front of him are necessarily like that good, where just, you know, it's about an offense, and there might be more ambiguity there than it seems like on paper. We did, yeah, the running backs did dry up pretty quickly. That's one of the things too you see on DraftKings, where, you know, ideally Ty Chandler, Cordarrelle Patterson, Gus Edwards, Leonard Fournette, I feel like after those guys, even Pierre Strong, CH, where, you know, I wanted to get that Hurst correlation. Like, in hindsight, Strong or CH, I think, are a tier above in terms of a running late round running back bet than Latavius.
Yeah, so just looking through these other teams, question in the chat asking is, which do we feel is the strongest kind of competition for us? I mean, I love a zero RB team, so I feel this team at pick 2 with Jefferson, Higgins, Devonta Smith, DeAndre Hopkins, TJ Hockenson, Jordan Addison, Traylon Burks, and Kirk Cousins is very nice. Built team at 103, Chase Olave is nice. They backdoored their way into the Gabe Davis stack with Josh Allen.
I like that.
Etienne Walker feels nice. I know Walker's somebody you guys are in on, and then we got Russ with Greg Dulcich, which is very nice as well. So I think that's a really nice team. I think, yeah, there's several teams that really stand out. Getting Christian McCaffrey at the 105, quite often gives some nice builds. So this team with McCaffrey, Hurts, Debo Samuel, McLaurin, Kittle, I think I'd feel a little bit better if there was any form of stack on the Hurts, if we were able to get Goddard, but Goddard, they took Kittle ahead of Goddard. So that's fine. I think the team one pick before us is one which I quite like. You know, they took Diggs, Garrett Wilson, DK Metcalf, and then went three running backs in an area of the draft, which last year I probably wouldn't have, with Joe Mixon, Alexander Mattison, Damian Pierce. But they feel like guys who might jump a bit next year. Anything standing out to yourself, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, those teams two and three, to me, I think are probably my favorites. I like how team three was pretty flexible in terms of, you know, they knew, I've done this on DK too, where I know quarterback sometimes a problem for me. So take Allen and make it work sort of thing. And they still get like some other nice wide receivers, and JSN and Flowers is bets around that. I think ETN and Walker is like an amazing 4-5 turn, like dual RB team without having to invest a ton in RBs. I like that team a lot.
Yeah, I think anytime you're starting to get sort of mid-third round Josh Allen, that's a bet I'd be happy to make at this point. We have a 2-5-9-2 build, obviously, just for two quarterbacks. There's nothing really standing out in terms of other quarterbacks of theirs. Sam Howell, Jimmy Garoppolo, Baker Mayfield, Ryan Tannehill. I don't know if you'd like to take any of them and shore up that position or just stay with a 2QB build here.
I think I'd roll the dice with 2QBs, just the way it worked out. Just there's no one really stackable or anything. So I think like a running back bet makes sense, or another tight end. We got two more picks.
Yeah,
I might just take Chase Brown and just take highest ADP at this point, since they're all like...
That's it. I mean, he's fallen 30 picks past ADP. Gives us a little week 17 correlation. It's not hard to tell yourself a story where Joe Mixon is out of favor with the Bengals in week 17 if things have gone wrong, and perhaps Chase Brown gets a little more play, or perhaps we're just looking to ease off Mixon before getting into the playoffs. So we do have one more pick. We've got a question from Zach in the chat. In your manifesto, you talked about getting a higher wide receiver running back ratio. Have you thought about using extra rounds to boost that ratio instead of a third quarterback tight end?
So when I was talking about that, I was talking about in terms of draft capital spent. And honestly, the draft capital of a really late wide receiver is almost zero. So I don't know if that gets you what you want. I think if anything, I'd rather increase that ratio by taking higher quality wide receiver in the middle rounds and backdooring again, like some of these starting tight ends at the very end who like we know are going to be on the field versus these wide receivers that are real dart throws. I think you'd actually increase your ratio higher than taking, even if you have one less total wide receiver on your roster.
Yeah. So we a couple of picks away. We've got 2-6-9-2 build. We do have Kyle Pitts and Hayden Hurst at tight end. Do you want to go with a tight end in this last bit? There's players like Luke Musgrave, Jake Ferguson, Zach Ertz, Jelani Woods.
Yeah, I think I'd swing at tight end. I don't know if you have favorites here. I mean, I like Musgrave and Henry, but Musgrave is more, I think, makes more sense structurally for our team where like we're covered and we want to just swing on upside.
Yeah, I think Musgrave and Henry were the two I'm kind of looking at. I mean, Henry has Kansas City, Denver, Buffalo correlation the whole way through the playoffs, which is kind of nice. And then Musgrave does go. So do you want to lock in Henry then?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's same bye week as Pitts, but
same bye week as Pitts.
We've already got the other one.
I think
I'd go Henry. Like we have Henry pretty undervalued by our ranks. And as you mentioned, like we have some mini correlations all across. So
yeah. So that does give us a 2-6-9-3 build, which was the second most common out of all the DraftKings finalist builds last year. I think the most common was a 3-6-8-3 build. But 2-6-9-3 kind of feels all right. I think I'm comfortable with that with Trevor Lawrence. To recap, our team is Austin Eckler, Jalen Waddle, Keenan Allen, Calvin Ridley, Trevor Lawrence, J.K. Dobbins, Kyle Pitts, Courtland Sutton, Rashad Bateman, Zay Jones, Rashad Penny, Rondale Moore, Raheem Mostert, Marcus Valdes-Scantling, Marvin Mims, Desmond Ridder, Hayden Hurst, Latavius Murray, Chase Brown, and Hunter Henry. Feels like a good team to me. Any kind of points in the draft that you wish had gone differently, Mike?
I mean, it's a little thing, but I probably would have waited on Hurst one more turn and taken like CEH there, yeah. Who there was a running back drop off at that point that I was slow to identify that I would have changed. And then I don't know if I would have maybe forced Tua or Russ around earlier that I wouldn't say for sure that's a mistake, but I'd have to go back and like look a little bit closer on if maybe we should have done that. I'm okay with a riskier second quarterback on the Lawrence stuff, but
I think if we'd gone to it, we've had to gonna go take him really early ahead of Kyle Pitts because he went over 7-11, which
So we wouldn't have done that. I think maybe Russ versus Zay, and Zay was a double stack, so even that one's tough. So I don't really know if that's a mistake. It's just more like I wish one of those guys maybe would have come back to us in one of those spots.
Yeah. Okay, so we are going to wrap things up pretty quick, but before we do, Mike, are you got anything going on at Establish Your Own that you want to tell people about in a minute?
Yeah, I mean, over on my podcast at Establish the Edge, part of the Establish Your Own podcast network, did finish doing 8 division previews in our projection special with Ben Gretsch. So want to make sure people check that out. And our Establish the Run rankings for DraftKings, Underdog, Best Ball, you know, we've got specific rankings for those formats. So just make sure to check those out. We're constantly updating those.
Yeah, I can't recommend enough going and reading Manifesto, which is in the description below, and then going and checking out the projection series with Ben Gretsch. Like, let's say it made me think about several players differently, made me think about how I've got those ranked. If you have been here, I really do appreciate you being in the chat. Really appreciate you drafting with us. Hit that subscribe button. We are going to be back next week with John Daigle. Rich has got loads of Dynasty content coming over the next few weeks. Back soon.